What you are about to hear is a completely unscripted conversation with Jim Young.
Wouldn't you say that we were born into the most comfortable circumstances for a whole culture?
Probably in the history of cultures. I mean, well, no, probably about it. It is the most we're the most privileged.
And what have we done?
Oh, we're working on it, Jim. We're going to turn that into something real nice. We are turning that into something real nice.
Well, what you guys were talking about earlier brings to mind the three greatest threats to our present situation, which we are totally kind of not paying attention to. The first one being the forces of nature.
Yep.
Biggest threat. And, you know, you got to include the viruses and all that stuff.
Sure.
Yeah.
An unhappy nature. Well, we were also talking before we started on air about the 4 or 5 rain events we had this week, which was not good old-fashioned summer showers. It was a Brazilian tropical couple of inches an hour. You know, it's really something.
And is it possible to see that as a cleansing? You know,
is it?
I don't know. It seems that where we live right here is kind of like a protected area.
The driftless, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah. The weather goes around it quite often.
Quite often.
And how do you account for that?
I'm sure it was the same design. I use the air quotes around the word design that made the glaciers miss us. You know, what the hell was that? I mean, why? Plenty of beautiful rolling terrain got flattened in the Midwest. In fact, all of it did, except us.
Yeah.
It's one of those questions.
I remember my teacher once said, the weather is a reflection of the subconscious of the people. And that's something you think about for like 40 years.
It's
trying to put it into place, right?
That's a big one. Now, when you say teacher, you don't mean Miss Meinzer in the second grade. You mean, who do you mean when you say, because I never had a teacher that said that to me.
Okay. No, this was my yoga teacher.
Okay.
Yeah. I think I sent you a piece of stories.
You did.
Yes.
And it was delightful. I think I'll hold that up to the microphone here. Yeah. Get this if you can. Next time you see Jim, you ask him for a copy of this. The word is pandit?
Yeah.
Is that a word for teacher, or is that his name?
It's like priest.
Okay.
Teacher. Yeah. He was a Hindu priest.
Okay.
Remarkable person. I'll just say a couple things about him. He told me that he went to South America as kind of like a missionary to the community of Hindus there, and then went to England. And he told me that I sat in my room and I read the London Times in order to learn English.
No kidding.
And then he went on to get his bachelor's, his master's, and his PhD in 3 years from the University of London.
Let me go back. Was he born in India?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, born in India, spent time in South America, met his wife, and then moved to London, got his 3 degrees, because he never went to college. But he was speaking before crowds of 16,000, 20,000 people when he was like 16 years old. Remarkable person.
I'm going to say, yeah, this is a very large spirit or brain or all of it. Wow. Why was he speaking to so many people when he was so young? What was that about?
Well, when he was about 4 years old, his dad was a manufacturer of big plants. And when he saw his son, he renounced it all, sold everything, and devoted his life to teaching his son.
You're kidding me.
No. So he was a remarkable person from the day he was born.
This is an industrialist who said, I'm going to sell it off and
chuck it all and
pay attention to my kid.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
I've never heard a story. Seriously, I've never heard a story like that.
Right.
People don't give up their stuff
no,
as a rule of thumb.
When you hang around with your kid all day.
What? I mean, obviously he had achieved, you know, the physical means to do that, but to want to do that,
right,
to just put yourself there.
Yes, yes.
And say goodbye to the widgets you were making millions of.
Right. Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah.
Yes, it was so much fun to ask him questions, although, you know, with a person like that, you're kind of intimidated.
I would be. I used to think I was smart.
Yes, but you feel really, yeah. Like one time I asked him, I said, well, Pandaji, what do you think about the resurrection?
And you were referring to Christian? Or?
Yes.
Oh, I can't wait.
He said, well, the question is, who died?
Yeah. Sounds like he was good at that sort of question.
Yeah.
Although, I don't know. He probably wasn't even trying, right? At that point, that was what came to mind. Although, I don't know. Teachers, that's just a loaded word, teacher, at least in my life, because, sure, you know, it's very pedagogical. It's very, there's an order. There's a yes, pecking order and a knowledge order and a bunch of levels of stuff.
Yeah.
I think well of teachers, but I don't think it's the kind of teacher you're talking about.
No, this is, it's like your own self showing up.
Okay.
And in fact, one time when I first met his master, I was sitting on the couch with him, and the first thing, you know, I didn't know what a swami was or a monk or nothing meant. That
sure
didn't mean that much to me. And I said, well, you know, who are you anyway?
Great opener.
He said, I am your own self looking back at you.
Whoa.
Which changes your whole view of relationships.
I would say.
You know?
I would say.
How do people think all the time that there's no division between us?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of a mind sees things in that way?
What did that feel like the first time he said that?
I think I probably just said, what the heck is that?
File it away?
Oh, really? Okay. Wonder what he means by that. Yeah. I did ask him, what are you doing here from India, you know? He said, well, I spent my whole life in the cave, in the monasteries, and you need human love, not just divine love. And I went, wow. This whole thing comes at you from a whole different direction.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, you don't even think about what could you do with that. But the question for us is, how do you get to the point where you're a spontaneous person?
It's,
you know,
for someone like me, that's a big question. It's, I mean, I guess it is for everybody, but.
And while you're talking to me, I'm not thinking about anything.
Yeah.
I'm just absorbing.
Yeah.
And to be that quick to talk back with people, yeah, how do you get there? It takes a certain practice, don't you think?
Oh, I'm sure of it because I'm experiencing part of it right now, part of the fear, part of the wonder, part of the, hey, this is all right. hey, I might survive this.
Yes.
And if I do, it'll be a very good thing. When I do, it will be a very good thing. Yeah, I should say here that I've, over the course of the years at this station, I've done hundreds of conversations with hundreds of different people. I have never gone scriptless. I'm serious. In 15 years and 300 some, I have never not had the questions in front of me. Now, am I good at diverging? Sure, I love ad-libbing. I love blah blah blah. But man, I had my crutch. You know, sure. if it ever got quiet for a second, I can look at, where do we go next?
Yes.
This is weird, Jim. This is, I'll say, wonderfully weird.
Yes.
And I'm floating. And
have you ever just sat with yourself and said, "Can I completely quiet down?"
Yes. Yes.
And how'd you do?
It depends. It depends. I've done that a lot, actually. I'm, for a yappy smartass, I do love my alone time. I treasure it. I run away when it's time. I have spent a lot of time with me. I'm also notoriously not deliberate about it,
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Do I talk to me when I'm quiet? I don't know. Do you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But I think at this stage in my life, and for any of you out there that are approaching the old days, like 75 or older.
I would say that's a nice mark.
Yeah. It's a skill that's absolutely necessary if you want to survive it.
Oh, do keep talking about that. Why?
To be by yourself, self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
Content. Now, in the yoga tradition, they say that the power of contentment comes from the practice of calming the mind.
Say it again. The power of?
The power of contentment comes from practicing relaxing the mind.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me turn it a different way. You can't be content if you can't calm your mind, or if you don't calm your mind.
Well, this is kind of a cause and effect.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's a whole chapter in the yoga text on what they call the siddhis, which is the powers. Like walking on water.
That would be a power,
right?
One that I lack.
Changing water to wine. That's a good one.
I think I follow your drift here. We're talking about a specific...
But all those things that we hear about... They have a practice, and it is a focus on a particular part of the material world that brings about your powers. And one of them is a focus on calming your mind down. It brings about a certain power.
Okay.
I guess that's the best way to sort of draw it out, explain it.
Well, I guess people do get good at that, right?
Yeah. When you think about it, anything that you focus on, whether it's showbiz,
mm-hmm.
interviewing,
mm-hmm.
First, I guess, to lay it out this way, the first thing that happens is that it occurs to you, okay, would you like to do this show and interview people and have conversations with them? Okay. Then you practice it.
Mm-hmm.
And you practice it like we're sitting now at the exclusion of everything else.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not thinking about anything else.
No.
I'm not doing anything. Okay. Then comes mastery. And this applies to the 100-yard dash in the Olympics. It applies to chess. It applies to everything. But it also applies to our growth as a human being, our realization as a complete person.
Focus.
Back in the good old days we were talking about earlier in human resources, which as we call personnel.
You're good. Yes.
In our performance appraisal, we not only talked about people's results, but the cause. And it was like no one had ever tried to say, okay, what is the cause of your performance?
Good or bad? Just your performance?
Yeah. Let's see.
Or did you even do good or bad? Did you use those words?
No, it wasn't a matter of good or bad. Okay. It was one cause is your ability to concentrate. That brings you a mastery of your profession. It determines how much quantity you...
Yeah.
And it determines the quality of your efforts, the fruits of your labor.
The fruit, the product,
yes,
as
the
it
product.
Were.
Yes.
Yeah.
But there was something... The second factor was attitude. Now, no one was trying to measure attitude. And the way we did it was we defined attitude as the atmosphere that you create around yourself.
Sure.
Now, Ed,
I get it.
You are a master at creating the field around you. I've watched you, and people just like you. You know, they like to walk up to you, and then, you know, it's a big curse for you. I'm telling you, it was like the last temptation of Christ or something. You know, name and fame.
Oh my God.
But it is work.
I follow.
Okay, now what happens if you
turn... So focus, attitude, right. Yeah, okay, got it.
And what happens if you turn that ability to focus inward?
All right.
What do you meet with first?
Yeah.
Your breath. Past the body, and what connects... I'm going on and on about this, but...
You go.
What connects the body to the mind? It is the breath. In fact, I think if you look closely, most people cannot change their mind without changing the breath.
You mean literally?
Literally. Physically. Yeah. If you move from one, what we would do in the class is that we'd say, okay, we want you to close your eyes and visualize a flower.
Okay.
Or any flower. Let's say a rose. Now, get your breathing going so that when you exhale, you pull in the stomach a little bit at the end of the exhalation. Inhale and fill up so that the rib cage comes out all the way around. And then there's no pause between the breath and no jerks when you're exhaling or inhaling. Now, take and put that rose in your mind. Keep the breath going. Now change from that visual of a rose to another flower and see what happens to your breathing.
That's funny.
What'd you notice?
There was a bump.
It's a catch.
Wow.
So,
I have never been thumped by a carnation before. I went from rose to carnation, and just as predicted by my friend here, there was a bump in my... Oh, that's wild. That's wild. You know what? I'm talking to Steve now, who is a wonderful guy who is producing all of these shows. He just gave me.
I know how to talk.
A signal that we're sneaking up on a break. Let's blow right through breaks today. Okay, Steve? You okay with that? Cool. Okay. Because this is too much fun. it's not every day that I get a bump in my focus. No, bump in my breathing. Of course, I change my focus. Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's say somebody gets aware that that happens, you know, that is there a next thing, or is it like,
oh yeah,
oh that's cool,
you know, it seems to go on forever. But okay, now you have your breathing as an object of focus, and what happens when there's nothing else but that? That is the feel of your breathing inside your nose. You get really good at breathing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the next step is to add sound. And there is a sound that we've been repeating from the moment of our birth. It is the sound of the breath. So on the inhalation and hum on the exhalation. Every child makes that sound. So on the
inhalation. I get it. I get it.
Hum on the exhalation. Now, what is the meaning? Now, that's a word. That's a sound. And I remember you and I were talking one time about this whole science of sound.
Yeah.
What is the meaning of that? So hum. It means I am who I am. Isn't that interesting?
You keep throwing these quotes around that most of us associate with
the
somewhere
Bible.
In Scripture.
Yes, yeah. The Bible, that's the name of God, right? So you're repeating God's name from the day you're born. You know, doesn't matter if you believe or not, doesn't matter.
If I recall from my studies, which I did a fair amount of, Jesus got in a whole lot of trouble for saying out loud, I am who am.
He did.
Because the priests and the Pharisees and the Sadducees and all the guys who knew what you were supposed to think said, oh, no, no, that's the last thing we can let you say. You just told me you were God.
Right. And the same thing happened with Moses when he was coming, you know, he finished with God and he said, well, who should I say sent me? Here, I got these tablets.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and got this beard. I look like Charlton Heston.
Isn't that an amazing coincidence?
Who should I tell my people sent me?
Yeah.
And the reply was, tell them I am who I am, sent you.
Yeah.
And when Jesus was going into Jerusalem and he sent the disciples ahead, they said, who should we say sent us into Jerusalem? And he said that. So something's going on here.
Something's going on. Connections. Yeah. Hey, we were talking the other day, and you had just finished reading a translation of a Native American text of the Gospels. Is that
the New Testament?
The New Testament. Okay,
yeah, 33 tribes.
Was it in each of 33 languages, or was it an amalgam of? I don't understand what the text was.
Well, they took the whole New Testament and divided it up. They'd assign one group, one tribal group.
Oh, got it.
You translate Matthew's thing, whatever, the Beatitudes or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's how they did it.
And then you read,
an
American English version of a translation of their translation.
Their translation into English.
Got it.
Yeah.
All of this was to get back to, you gave me the most wonderful name for the person we grew up calling the Blessed Mother, you know, Jesus' mother. And the name that they gave her was?
Bitter Tears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That really, I went home saying that. And I don't spend a lot of time anymore now that I'm practicing whatever, agnostic. But I thought about that name for a long time.
Yes.
That's very powerful.
And I think that there are among us men who are starting to be more sensitive to this feminine thing.
Okay.
And they're beginning to see it in our culture. This whole Trump thing is just a perhaps the last gasp of the masculine. And, you know, the end of that. It's like we're living in the end of the age of religion, right? It's, you know, I hate to tell you Christians out there, but enjoy it while you can.
One could certainly make the case, yeah.
And I think that for us men, we will not make progress as a human being until we begin to embrace the feminine. Absolutely necessary. As necessary as the left side of your nose is to the right side of your nose. The left side of your brain, the right side of your brain. Left side of your mind, right side of the mind. It's a total integration, don't you think?
Makes sense.
Yeah. How has your relationship with the feminine changed?
Oh, enormous. My knee-jerk response is enormously. Over the years, you know, I was, there was a day when I was pretty much a ball of, what do we have, testosterone?
Oh, yeah.
You know, where, that was it, man. That was it. I got enormously lucky, I think, being born physically small. I couldn't go around enforcing that.
Right.
You know, there's no way. I was going to lose that fight if, you know, I threw myself at somebody who was 40 pounds heavier and 6 inches taller.
Right.
I'm going to lose. So that's interesting. I got a head start simply because of my physical nature. I learned a long, long time ago, somewhere in grade school, that for me, what was going to get me through was to run really fast and to be funny.
Oh.
And that, man, I got through things where other kids got beat up, you know?
Right.
And one way or another, I was one of the ones who got out of there. Sometimes it was being funny. Sometimes it was running faster than anybody else. But it certainly wasn't calling up my mojo and start wailing on somebody because, you know, I'm going to lose.
Right.
Interesting. So I don't know. I think that speaks to masculine, feminine. I don't know. In a experiential sort of way.
Yeah. It brings to mind the question of how is it that I am the way I am when I was, you know, a kid. There's a lot of our friends who were born into very difficult circumstances.
Yep.
And with religion hanging over their head like,
yep,
you know. And I listen to them and I try to think, why was it that this, because I believe in justice. I think it permeates this room. I think it permeates the traffic. It permeates the co-op. It permeates television. Everything, justice. And there must be a reason why you were born into this circumstance, being a smaller person and learning how to be funny, learning how to navigate.
You know? It's a great word, navigate. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's exactly what it is.
Yeah. I enjoy that kind of a puzzle, but don't take too long on it because you got to get back to the here and now, right?
Yeah, we are sitting here in front of microphones. And
yes.
This notion of... See, you keep using words with me that may have meant different things in my life. Justice, where I came from, religiously and culturally, meant... getting punished when you're wrong. I mean, it's pretty simple.
Yeah.
Justice was a justified governmental revenge. that's justice.
Right.
That's why you're in the slammer, or ultimately, that's why we're going to execute you. That's not the justice you're talking about? Or is it one of the justices you're talking about?
Yeah, it's included in the whole stream of justice. But how do you explain that life is painful? Why would life be painful? Is it possible that because we are beings of spirit, living in the material world would naturally be painful? It's also very pleasurable.
To be sure.
Yeah. Now, so there's something about our choices that cause us pleasure and pain. One time my teacher said, well, look at your most pleasurable experience you've ever had in your life.
Okay.
Was it not painful in that you had to go through some pain to get there? And then when you were having that wonderful, pleasurable experience, wasn't it painful because it could have been just a little bit more pleasurable, right? And then it had to end. So he said, for every dollar's worth of pleasure in this world, 99 cents worth of pain. And I think that's where your wife, the Buddhists, come in and they say, yeah, okay, face up to it. Life is painful. Start with that. And what is the cause of it being painful? Are you the cause of your pain?
I know the answer that certain people would give me.
Yes.
You know?
What would they say?
It's because of one's desiring. It's because of one's needing. It's because of one's... So it follows that if you can't get what you want... Hold it, there's a song in there. No, never mind. And that did pretty well for a blues rock hit. I hear that a lot. I have a number of Buddhist friends who are very aware that life is painful and then you die. You know, it's like...
That's what I used to say when I subbed in the high school. You know, at the end of the class, the bell rings, you're standing by the door, and everybody's walking by
you. Oh, no, you didn't.
Yeah.
And
the kids would, you know, a guy would be coming through, and he'd be complaining about things, you know, moaning and groaning.
Sure, kids do.
And I would say, well, you know what they say, life is crap, and then you graduate from high school. So in that...
Yeah.
Is there justice in that? In the fact that, you know, we had painful experiences?
Well, here I am struggling with that word again. I can almost get myself to agree it is what it is, you know, pain, pleasure, death. I still don't get what is justice?
Yeah,
got to do with it. Can you help me with that?
I don't think I can.
Okay.
Okay. We can let it go for a moment.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure, sure.
I think it's a new idea for me, only recently acquired, that if there is any justice in the world, it has to be perfect or it doesn't exist. There's no such a thing as imperfect justice.
That wouldn't be justice, would it?
No.
Yeah, right.
No.
Right.
And it doesn't fit. I often want to ask religious people, do you think that you are perfect? And they would say, well, no, I'm flawed, I'm sinful, you know?
Sure.
So the question is, how can imperfection come from perfection? If the divine is perfect, how can anything created be imperfect?
Sure. That's one of the 10 great questions, I think. I don't know what the other nine are, but that's certainly one of the, seriously, that's a great question. Why is anything not right? Why is anything not right?
Yeah.
Yeah, let me put the emphasis where it belongs. If indeed it's the work of perfection, then why isn't it perfect? Or is, well, that's the other question. Is it perfect?
Well, it changes your view of your kids, you know, and
sure,
your friends. If you start with the fact that you are a perfect Ed,
yeah,
it changes, you know. I'm not going to try to fix you. I'm not
okay.
Looking, you know. It's almost like there's no comparison even between the two of us.
I totally get that.
Yeah.
Yep.
So.
Well, that's a big deal, though, there, Mr. Young. That's a big deal if the world was to start thinking that way. Like, I'm not going to compare you to me and decide one is better. You talk about a slippery slope. Dang.
Yes.
Dang. I had a very dear friend all the way through college and after, very smart fellow, who loved to study philosophy and religion. He wouldn't have claimed to be either philosophical or religious, but he was extremely, I'll say, knowledgeable.
Right.
And he sat me down in a bar one day and carefully explained that it was, among Christians, that it was St. Paul who invented faith because he didn't want to deal with the notion that all Jesus told people to do was to be like him. You know, go sell what you have, give it to the poor, do this, do this, do this, do this, and be like me, follow me. And now St. Paul, being, you know, a rational non-Christian at one point, says, well, we can't be, so, but we can believe. And then he goes and is...
That's
the absolute cornerstone of faith in Christianity is St. Paul.
Yes.
He gave us the secret. Well, we can't be that good, but we can sure believe.
I know. And
absolute critical to the whole story.
And there were so many questions you would have as a kid, and the answer would be, well, you just got to have faith.
Oh, big time.
You know, you just got to believe.
You should have met my dad.
And your whole rest of your life, you're going, how can I strain at that one?
Yeah.
You know. The yoga tradition has an interesting take on faith.
Okay.
They define faith as the belief that the effort you're making is worth it. You believe in what you're doing. That's faith. And George Harrison, he once quoted Vivekananda, yes. Because somebody asked him, do you believe in God? And Vivekananda said, if there is a God, we must see him. If there is a soul, we must perceive it. Otherwise, why believe? It's better to be a devoted atheist than a hypocrite. Oh. Which is kind of like a slash on Paul, on St. Paul, saying...
You can't be that way, so
if you
believe.
Can't see God, why make it up? Why just say, oh, I believe that it's there. I think it's there.
All right.
You see?
Now, in this, I couldn't repeat the name that you used, the great teacher, or was it a book, that, who said, unless you can see God, Vivekananda.
Vivekananda is a monk in the,
certain
tradition.
Now,
self-realization fellowship and all that.
When that person talked about seeing God, what does that mean? Did they mean representational? That's why we make so many images of gods? Or is that what he meant?
No, I think it's more like you start with the idea that the divine is not separate from us.
Got it. Okay.
Not separate from the world. This divine permeates everything. This table in front of us,
mm-hmm.
the Coke machine,
mm-hmm.
the food, the tree, the you. And so you're looking at God sitting across the table,
mm-hmm.
you know, walking outside, breathing the air, you feel it, you know.
Are you conscious of that all the time?
Yeah, yeah, you can't.
In your life?
No, it's like I've heard this idea several years ago, and so you work on it for like the next 50 years, you know?
Let me check my clock here.
And
yeah.
You got to examine these things, you know, and say, well, that sort of gives me an idea of something I don't know about.
Okay.
And if I continue... in earnest in my practices.
So that's what study is. Study isn't memorizing. I mean, the study you're talking about is not paragraph 12 of, you know, so-and-so's tome on belief.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Got it. Well, you're sort of back to focus and attitude again, aren't you?
Yeah, those are the... I think all of the systems of self-improvement agree on one thing, and that is there's two elements to making progress. One is effort, and the other is surrender.
Okay.
So you can, like you just said, you can only go so much trying to figure out paragraph 12, subsection 3,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, there's a certain point where it's not giving up. It's opening up.
Is that to say I've done enough today? Is it? I keep looking for other ways to say things so that I understand them.
Sure.
Surrender means.
Well, you have to make the effort to inhale and exhale.
Right? Okay.
But in the exhalation, there's a chance to completely relax every portion of your body and let it sink back into the earth and let it go.
Okay.
So even in your breath, you're making an effort.
I get that.
But you're also surrendering.
I get that.
Yeah.
I get that feeling on the exhale, even before I talk to you.
Okay.
I remember having that feeling of letting go is a phrase I'm comfortable with, you know, letting go.
And it's an AA thing, right?
Is it?
Higher power. It's
okay.
A recognition at first. Just I recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And then perhaps something way beyond us, but an absorption into that bigger reality. A surrender. Yeah. It's a good thing... when you're talking to people, a good practice, because the effort is often you try to think of something while they're talking.
Absolutely. I hear people do it all the time.
Me too.
It makes me crazy.
I know.
It makes me freaking crazy.
It does, and it's kind of nauseating, isn't it?
it is painful. I'll give you that.
Yes.
I mean, you can... Anyway, it's a pet peeve of mine. I should... I've heard a lot of bad radio in my life, and a big part of it is the damn interviewer who is on the next question before you finish telling the interviewer that your mother just died. You know, got to be followed with talk about your mother dying, not what kind of car do you like to, you know. But so many, it is a pet peeve. I'll calm down here. I've heard too many people do that. They're just looking to get through the next 5 minutes. Thank you very much. And click, thanks for a great show. Love you. It'll be broadcast, da-da-da-da-da-da.
Future tripping. One of the biggest flaws in...
That's a great phrase.
Mental illness is to constantly be thinking about the future.
You mean like what's next? Or
yeah. I can remember about 4 years ago, and you know, I've been retired for... ever, it seems like.
Some people would say you were born retired, Jim.
Yes, I don't mind the re part, but the tired is starting to get to me.
Nice. Okay, you've been retired for a while.
I was sitting in my kitchen, bending over, tying my shoe, and I realized I was hurrying.
Oh, that's funny.
And I thought, why?
Why?
What? It's because I'm thinking about the next thing. If I get my shoes tied, I'll get to the co-op and have some coffee. Or, you know.
Yeah.
What a waste.
Boy, that is. That's a colossal waste.
Hurry.
That's a colossal waste. That's very good. Thank you. My mother's mother, my German grandmother, born and raised immigrant, immigrated to the United States during World War I. Now put your head around that. Here's a German speaking, almost no English. She landed in New Orleans in the South. You either hit New York or you hit New Orleans. So here she is, Southern United States. World War I has broken out a couple of years ago. Who is the enemy? Who is the Goth? Who is the devil? It's German people.
Yes, even
so I can't imagine what she went through. Anyway, I digress. She achieved dementia, what we used to call senility, pretty early on, and she lived with us her last 25 years. Bless my mother, who... You know, she never even thought about, well, let's put her away. So she nursed her, and we had enough money to get regular care. We didn't have live-in care, but there was somebody around many times a week. And most of these caregivers were people of color, women from Jamaica in the islands in the Caribbean. I wish I could do that wonderful accent. I can't. It's just wonderful.
It is.
When you say Caribbean, it's so beautiful. Anyway, one of them, I was in high school, and I would commute, so I'd walk home from the L stop. And I'm walking down the alley. She's looking out the window at me, and she turned to my mother, and she said, "That boy will never have a heart attack." Of course,
really?
I was going slow. And as I think more than one person has commented on the speed at which I walk, which is my Mary, who is of the other school of walking.
I've seen you walking. Yes, you are taking it easy. Yes.
Yeah. Now, in my Western trained mind, that's wiring, man. That's how I came into the world. You know, that's whatever you call it, laid back. I'm sure there's all kinds of personality trait words for it. I don't know them, but I always thought, well, that's how I came in. Now you got me thinking it's a damn good practice
right.
not to hurry. So I'm going to take a minute and pat myself on the back for 75 years of not hurrying.
Yes. Now if you could only...
No. No, I'm happy right now. There's no follow-ups.
Right.
I'm sorry. What were you going to say? Now if I could only...
No, I don't know.
Now, little Eddie, if you could only...
Well, this brings up something you and I talked about a few weeks ago. How much in this culture we pay attention to genetics, ancestors.
Big time.
Looking into that little stringy code and trying to figure out why you're gay and all that. And how much, because we're a behavioralist, psychology-oriented culture, we pay attention to the circumstances. What I'm beginning to see more and more is what people bring with them. Remember we were talking about my questions to new moms. Do you see the influence of their ancestors? Yes. Do you see the influence of the circumstances on who this child is? Yes. But do you also see what they bring with them? I think that's the biggest force in your life.
Okay.
So you brought something with you to walk the way you walk.
I'm squinting.
And you're here to figure out what to do with that.
Wow. You keep messing with me.
I apologize.
No, you don't. And,
on behalf of my entire ancestry.
Yeah, what you brought with you. Yeah. Okay, here's an innocent enough question. Brought from where?
Right.
Where did you pack that up? I mean...
Yes. Where did that come from? And, you know, some people would say, well, it's just the big globby mishmash of biology that happened to fall into place, and Ed is a slow walker.
Mm-hmm.
Bull hockey. And other people would say, well, it's God's will. You know, God sits up there and says, I think I'm going to cause this kind of little, a little spark of life to be like Ed. And oh, here's one, I'm going to be like, this person's going to be like that. I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so. So, Carrie, I think you are responsible for bringing it with you.
I'm letting that sit.
What if the white people here in the Driftless,
okay,
are a reincarnation of the indigenous people that used to live here? And I worked at an Indian reservation for their government.
Okay.
And what if the Native Americans that are Native Americans now were the white people? Is that justice?
You're talking about some kind of karma here, aren't you?
Well, I avoid saying that because people have misinterpreted that word. Karma just means action.
Okay.
It doesn't mean predestination. It doesn't mean bad, or nothing. It just
doesn't mean you deserve it.
No. Oh, okay. Karma is just action.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
And the premise is fascinating. What if? This is funny. I've heard a comedian who is African American doing a bit, and it's startling to hear somebody say it. What if I was a slaveholder? What if I used to be wearing the other shoe?
Yeah.
Is this... And what does... And half the crowd gasped. It was like... And I was one of them. I'd never thought of that before. You know?
It's too spooky.
It is very spooky. Yeah. Yeah. I'm...
So, you come to these ideas... And if you're an open person, you don't go right away, that's...
You're right.
Can't
use it.
Okay, yes. And you just let it percolate. And if it's not a valid idea, it will eventually go away. But I think that's what we're supposed to do with ideas. Let it sit there.
I've always been the other person, that if I hear something that on the surface doesn't make sense to me, or I even think worse of it, that's the stupidest thing I ever heard, or I can't understand what... I've been dismissive my whole life. I mean, that was the easiest. That was... Okay, great. See ya. You've given me the notion that in the years remaining, that would be an interesting practice.
Yeah, have to reject, and don't have to accept. Just let it sit
what
there.
What if I muddled around in it forever, you know? Yeah. Wow.
And most ideas, if they're not valid, they'll just go away, you know?
It's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm thinking on a personal level here, for sure.
Like?
I mean, there's plenty of terrible ideas that hang on in the world. They don't go away. You know, like, these people are inferior, or those people are... but on a personal level, you can... Yeah. Hey, thanks, Jim. This is so interesting. Here comes my radio self. This is so interesting, because I've never done it before. I mean, allowed people to listen in on... My talking to you, you're talking to me.
Well, it's one more incident of, oh, the here and now is constantly calling us. We are not going to get smart in the past. We are not going to get smart in the future. Oh, this is it.
That's great, yeah.
You know, this is it.
Kind of buffaloes one's notion of education, doesn't it? Like, yes, I will get smart, you know.
Well,
someday.
Well, education is an institutional training of you to focus.
Okay.
Right? Geology, geometry, English. Mm-hmm. These are all subjects that you are, as a student, focusing on. And that's the whole purpose of the thing. Because what you brought with you will determine your destiny, will determine what you're going to do, will determine what you're going to walk, it'll determine what subjects you're attracted to. But in the meantime, just practice your focus.
You make this sound fiendishly easy, Jim. And it's not, damn it.
What makes it hard, Ed?
The other 75 years of my life. Thanks a lot. Thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah, it's been hard, hasn't it?
No, it's been... Never mind.
Do you notice how all that hard stuff that you had to go through is disappearing? And if you look back...
I do.
Like your story with your grandma?
Yeah.
What you remember is those moments of realization, the good things, the, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's a cultural sickness that we go back over this, you know.
Oh, big time.
I have friends that have brought up their mother being such a dorky, terrible, dysfunctional person. It's like, is your mother around? No, she's in the grave. Okay, well, why don't you put her in the grave and leave her in there, okay? Let the dead bury the dead. I'm sorry.
Is that a quote? That's really good. That's James Joycean. Thank you.
I think it's biblical, but actually.
Let the dead bury the dead. I love that.
That's what Jesus said, right?
Make an awful song, but...
Yes.
But I love the notion. And you're right. My life has a number of people, some of them very important to me, who cannot let that stuff go.
Yeah.
Or will not, whatever, you know, however you say it, will not let that stuff
go. It's a flaw in our therapeutic practices.
Yeah, sure.
Because the therapy for that kind of a thing is to give people something else to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true with all kinds of addictions.
Sure it is.
Bad habits.
That's why I do this other stuff, so I don't do that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, damn it, Mr. Young.
Yes.
we've used up all our time.
Okay.
That was...
You think of...
Wow. That's... I do have to tell whoever might be listening to this that they've been listening to the voice of Jim Young talking to me, Ed Holohan, on the radio.